Cultivate Simple, episode 39.
Hey, buddy, keep it seasonal.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. And this is episode 39, and today we're talking about living from month to month, living seasonally, keeping it seasonal. We're still trying to figure out a title. We've got a working title, Living Seasonally. Isn't that the name of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, which we're going to be talking a little bit about tonight. But before we get to that, we have the quote of the week. Now, in order to explain the quote of the week, we have to talk a little bit about around the run, because, or around the country, if you live in the United States, I guess it would be, because this past week, the U.S. experienced a heat wave pretty much nationwide from the little that I heard of the news, and too busy to read the news because I was trying to stand in front of a fan all week. I kept complaining that this is not the weather that I signed up for in moving to Maine. It was just hot this week.
We were hotter than Ohio most of the...
Yeah, I think in the 90s.
Last couple weeks.
In the mid-90s couple days, but in the 90s all week. And it was just... It was miserable. It was terrible. Most houses in Ohio or in Maine here do not have any sort of air conditioning, and so luckily we had a little window unit that we brought with us from Ohio that we've had for many, many, many years.
Yes.
So we kept that in our bedroom and just
at least we had some cool air at night.
Sweated out all day and slept with the window air conditioner on in the evening. But thank goodness the heat broke.
Last night,
and we had some storms come through and thought we were going to get called out for some power lines down for the fire department.
Yeah, but everybody was getting called out. Yeah. Brian was ready, but Liberty never got called.
Well, and at one point we did. Our tone went off, our page went off, and I was like, there it is, and started going out the door. But then as soon as they toned it, they canceled it, and it was a different department they wanted. False alarm. So... But that's all right. But then today, we're what, 75 was the high today, I think, or 78. Oh man, it was beautiful. So we spent all day outside today. But this past week, so in order to explain the quote of the week, I didn't wear a shirt much of the week, which I don't typically do. I don't know. I just, that's one of those things for me. It's like a, what would you even call that? How would you describe that for me? It's just like a, it's not a pet peeve, but it's just one of those.
It's just not in your nature.
No.
I think you kind of knew someone that did that when you were younger and it always drove you nuts.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things you don't want to do because it always drove you nuts that someone else did it.
So I didn't wear a shirt much of the week, just to try to stay cool. So that is, part of what leads to the quote of the week. The other part of the quote of the week is...
Oh, we should explain that part afterwards.
Afterwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
So the quote of the week, as we were going down to get the mail the other day, we have to walk down to the road, and then you have to kind of walk... we have a good section of the driveway that's visible from the road. And so... And I didn't want to walk down without a shirt, but it was so hot, I decided to. So then the quote was... I don't know why I'm worried about not having a shirt on when I have a cup on my head. Which, because...
Why did you have a cup on your head?
Well, I had a blue. I had a blue Solo cup.
Although it was the Chiviado Solo cup.
Well,
so
yeah.
Knock off.
The generic ones. But it has to be blue.
Yep.
That both of us had blue Solo cups and Solo and the cheap ones pinned to our hats that had... What's this stuff called?
Let me go get it and look.
Yeah, so we had blue Solo cups with stuff that Susie's going to give you the name of stuck to our heads, because here in Maine, this time of the year, we have got deer flies. And if you've never experienced deer flies, or horse flies are similar. They're from the same family of fly, aren't they?
A deer fly is a horse fly, yeah. But
oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought they were different. I thought that the horse flies were bigger.
They are. They're from a deer fly is a type of a horse fly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's
when
how
you
it
said
works.
They were, I thought that you meant that they were the boat. I was like, no. Yeah. The horse flies in Ohio could carry you off. They were big.
Yeah, they were.
But anyway, deer flies, if you've never experienced them, are annoying.
Super annoying.
They come in and they just fly around your head, fly around your head, fly around your head, and eventually land and bite. And so this past week, I've got, I don't know, 6 or 8 bites on me, and they draw blood. I mean, they are nasty.
Yeah, they are.
And then one evening, Susie came in and she had a bite on her cheek, and she got bit on the eyelid, like right on the inside, right above the tear duct.
Yeah.
And so the next morning she woke up and
then I had one on my neck and one on my arm and one on my ankle because I'd been out working late in the garden that evening.
The next morning she woke up and her eyelid was completely swollen shut and her cheek was swollen up. It looked like it was crazy. The one whole side of her face was just kind of swollen from it. So we decided to wage war. So Susie started
doing a little Google research.
How do you take care of deer flies? Because obviously, you know, we're very much of the mindset that we want nature to balance out into.
That's right.
Yeah. Until, that is.
Do you wake up and can't see out of one of your eyes? And it's not that I'm going to, I mean, you know, you could spray or do, you know, some people do that kind of stuff. We didn't want to spray. We didn't want to do any of that. But I thought there has to be something because you can't put on any kind of like a natural bug repellent or anything. They don't care. That doesn't faze them one bit. So I was like, there has to be a way to do something. So I got online and read, and sure enough, there's this college professor, I think, who came up with this scheme where I guess deer flies for some reason are attracted to blue, and he studied like their patterns, and they always swarm around things that are moving and tall things. So that's why they kind of swarm around your head and they circle and kind of dive bomb you. So he came up with this thing of using sticky stuff, which you can buy deer fly tape that you just put on your hat. And it's like a double-sided sticky tape that you put on your hat when they land on, because they're always landing on your head. They stick to it. But then after doing some Google research, I found this guy who you buy this stuff that's called Tangle Trap, which is a sticky coating. Essentially, it's the stuff that's on like a fly paper or that kind of thing. But you buy it in a can. And then you paint it on a blue cup, and then you pin that to your hat, because for some reason they're attracted to blue, and since they're attracted like to height and movement, they automatically go for the hat. So I made up a couple of these and we pinned them to our hats, and then we decided to walk down to the driveway because they just are ridiculous on the walk down to the...
Yeah, it's something about the woods. Whenever I drive the car down through there, by the time I get down to the bottom, I mean, I have to have the windows up, because by the time I get to the bottom of the driveway, there's about 10 of them flying around the car. Uh-huh. I don't know if that's that field that you experience halfway down, or if it is the woods or what. But yeah, so we decided to walk down to the mailbox, and that's kind of where the quote came from, because I didn't have a shirt, but yet I had a blue cup
pinned to the top
of my hat. But it works.
Yes. When we got back up, you had how many? 7?
Well,
or 9?
Yeah. I think I had 7 then. And you had 2 or 3. And even as we were walking down, because we took Lucy, our dog, with us, and even as we were going down, there were 2 that were flying around her. And so we called her back and we put our heads down by her face and boom, boom, and they were caught. Because they just
it's
fly
amazing.
Around. It's amazing.
And so yesterday and today, right, we wore the hats around. Today in particular, because we were both outside all day. And you're walking around and you just hear one come buzzing up, and then you don't hear it anymore. And it's just instantly stuck to the
or
cup
you
on
hear,
your head.
Yeah. As they're
it's quite
buzzing
remarkable.
On your head.
And, you know, I was worried that we were going to be catching all kinds of stuff. But in reality, you just catch deer flies, and there are like some other little gnat things that kind of get stuck to it too. But, you know, it's not like you're catching bees and...
Yeah.
Wasps or butterflies or anything else. It's pretty much just deer flies. And I think it's because of this whole like
Because they fly around
because
your head.
Their nature and the attraction to blue and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's fascinating. It works like a charm. It's nice to work outside and not have them bite you and end up all like swollen and itchy for a week.
So if you have a deer fly problem, or I assume it would work with horse flies since they're of kind of the same ilk. I don't remember them zooming around your head as much, though. No,
some flies are attracted to yellow, too. Okay. So maybe a little Google research. I'll do a post about how to make these later this week, I think, on my blog.
I have to take some pictures.
Take some pictures.
Maybe with my shirt on, at least.
Because they're pretty fantastic, actually.
But yeah, so if
you've been impressed anyways.
We've been very impressed. So if you have deer, well, every night when we would go up to feed the pigs, there would always be a deer fly or two around us.
There would be a bunch of them.
And now, you know, they just get caught. So it's great. and Susie's having like all kinds of nasal problems tonight. It's like all of a sudden your nose just filled up. Is it allergies or what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I went out to let the chickens or close up all the chickens and the ducks and bring the keets in, and it just was like instantly my nose stuffed up. So I'm sure it's some sort of something that's blooming or something. I don't know what it is.
Something that opens up at night.
Yeah.
Because you really haven't had too much.
I haven't had much trouble. I don't usually have allergy problems.
Yeah. I usually have a little bit of seasonal allergy, hay fever kind of stuff, but.
But yeah, something about tonight, so.
So we're going to be sniffing throughout the whole podcast. Yeah. So enjoy that, folks. So what else has been going on? We moved the pigs this week. They've been in kind of a wooded area that we have around our chicken coop. And we actually joined the fences to expand out their electric fence a little bit. And so we decided to move them because we wanted to put them back into the main garden to eat some of the ground cover that we had up there. And so in doing that, we decided to take down the fence in between the chicken area and the pig area, which we talked about last week.
Yeah.
But then expand that out. And it's kind of funny because now the chickens are liking having access to the pig area because they go up and find any grains that are left over.
Pardon our dog eating bones in the background, if you can hear that.
Yeah. I'm surprised the cat fight hasn't busted out yet. Usually that's part of the podcast as well. A cat fight or a cat playing with something. So yeah, the chickens are having a good time going up there and sort of cleaning up after the pigs. And then also going over into the garden area as well.
And last night when I'm experimenting with making fermented chicken food. And so I took a big rectangular Pyrex up there last night full of feed for the, you know, fermented food for the chickens. And they all came running except for one. And I was counting them because I was going to lock them in the coop. And I'm like, there's one missing. Or maybe I've just somehow miscounted chickens every night for the past, you know, while. Because since when we got home on July 1st, I was like, well, I'm counting 16. So I'm assuming that's how many chickens we had because I'd kind of completely forgotten. So I was like, well, I'm going to walk around and see if I can find her, you know, see if she's out here. And so I started walking around and I walked up by the pigs and we had just fed the pigs and the pigs were up there eating and she was up there eating the pig food, like right with the pigs. And they weren't like chasing her off or
which
anything.
If you've ever seen two pigs eat at the same time, it's
kind
of scary because they're pushing and shoving and
chicken,
fighting and
like a chicken pancake. But yeah, she's just up there eating their food and they didn't care at all. So I got her to follow me down because I wanted to close them all up in the run, but it was kind of humorous, I thought.
Yeah. Coexist.
Yes.
What else has been going on? We've started harvesting quite frequently, I guess you could say, from the garden. Different crops have been coming in.
And I might talk about this on the blog later, but I should mention it here. So I planted a bunch of broccoli and I started some of my own from seed. And I've always grown heirloom broccoli just because I prefer to grow heirloom open pollinated seeds just in case I want to save seed, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then this year I started a bunch of seeds. And then I was at a local, like a career center kind of place. And they have a greenhouse there, and then the high school kids grow plants and then they sell seedlings to raise money to pay for all of the costs of maintaining their greenhouse for their, you know, like horticulture program or whatever. So I bought six broccoli plants, I think, from them. And it was Bay Meadows broccoli, which Johnny's Selected Seed sells. So I planted them in the garden and they were just beautiful heads of broccoli. It was like broccoli from the grocery store. That like perfectly formed head with like the tiny little broccoli balls. I mean, just like perfect. They looked exactly
like... they called florets?
Yeah, they look exactly like what you would get in the grocery store, yeah. Didn't they? I mean, just, I was like amazed because I've always grown heirloom broccoli and it's just not kind of, it's not like that. It has like the little balls that form the tree canopy or whatever you want to call it in the broccoli. Like those, what opens up into the flower heads are larger. The heads are a little more open. They're not like perfect little domes. They're just a little more kind of organic or free flowing or, you know,
whimsy,
hippie, or I mean, I don't know what you want to call it. They're just kind of, they're not neat and tidy, that's for sure. And the plants are usually taller and the stems are skinnier and they have a tendency to flop over and they've got smaller leaves and they bolt and then they have beautiful yellow flowers and they get tall and, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things. But then these plants, which I have some heirloom broccoli growing in the garden too, these plants, perfect little heads. But then it got really hot and I was like, oh no, all the broccoli's gonna bolt. Because I had a couple different kinds of heirloom. And I've been harvesting a little bit here and there. And then these heads, for some reason, all came ripe at exactly the same time. Which, that's one of the good things I like about heirloom broccoli. Is usually, even if you seed them all at the same time, they don't all come ripe at exactly the same. Like, it's not, I've got to harvest all of my broccoli in one day. You can, you know, do it over the course of a week or whatever and just eat a lot of broccoli. But these all were ready in one day. And they didn't kind of bolt or go to flower. They just kind of, some of the little balls turn yellow and then they shake off the heads really easily. It's kind of weird. It's like their bread did not bolt and go to seed. And then the stalks were a lot heavier and firmer, so the plants were a lot sturdier and stood up straight a lot better than the heirloom ones. But I must say I much prefer the heirloom ones because I like that you can eat more of the stalk. I like kind of the looser heads that have longer stems. I like that the plants do bolt and go to flower because sometimes I'll even pick them even when they're getting bigger and have some of the flower heads on them and we'll eat them that way as well. But I don't know. They just, and I like that they're not all ready at once, which I really hate because I don't grow broccoli to freeze broccoli and to keep it in the freezer to eat it all winter. I just want a little broccoli to eat stir fries in the summer, you know,
right.
For our food. So yeah, but I ended up having to pick all that broccoli and then I had to blanch it and we ate a lot of it, but I froze two kind of smaller containers of it because it was just already all at once.
So do you think that's, I mean, that is still an heirloom variety though, isn't it?
No, it's not an heirloom.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's a hybrid.
Oh, okay.
Which is why it's like that, because it's bred to be, it can be used as a commercial one. Right. So they want them to be all exactly the same. And that's kind of what, you know, I mean, that's what you want if you're a commercial grower. You don't want your broccoli, you don't want to have to pick broccoli every day for 2 weeks.
Right.
You want to be able to harvest all of your broccoli at once. You want every head to look the same,
right.
And all of these looked exactly the same. So, I mean, that was kind of an interesting thing because I really focus. I just don't do a lot of those kinds of, I don't do hybrids and stuff. It's just not something I have ever really gotten into because I don't particularly care about looks. I care more about flavor and more sometimes about what the plant looks like itself, that kind of thing. Huh. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
An interesting kind of a garden experiment.
We also picked all the peas. I don't think we talked about that on last week's show, even though I think we did that last week.
I don't remember.
But we also picked all the peas, which you had a lot of peas planted this year.
Yeah, I had two 70-foot rows of peas.
Two 70-foot rows. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. That is a lot of peas.
And excuse me, how many peas did we end up harvesting out of that?
I ended up, harvesting probably like shelled peas, probably about 16 pounds, I would say, somewhere thereabouts.
And then you also decided to put some to seed. So those are still up in the garden. We're still watering them.
I have about it's probably an 8 foot, 10 foot row that I have that I left. I decided, and this is one of the good things about growing kind of heirloom open pollinated seed, is that you can save your own seed. And so I was getting ready to harvest all the peas, and we had so many because they produced fairly well this year. I mean, I planted a lot. So I was like, Brian was asking me what kind they were and where I got them from. And so I looked it up because I had gotten the original seed from High Mowing. And I think I paid like $8 to $10 for maybe it was a pound of pea seeds. I can't remember exactly what I bought, or half a pound or something like that. And he said, so you're going to save your own seed? And I said, I hadn't really thought about it. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, yeah, I will. I'll just leave the first two sections. I'll leave them on there, and I'll let them dry, and then I'll save those, and I'll use those for my pea seeds next year. So then that'll save me $10 next spring, which is kind of nice. And that's one of the great things about growing heirloom or open pollinated, because there are some, you know, non-heirlooms that are open pollinated. Right. Open pollinated is what you're looking for as far as being able to save your own seed. So.
And then we were talking today about the back garden and how there's a lot of lettuces and different things mm-hmm. that are ready to be harvested, but unfortunately they're too pretty to harvest, so you're not going to harvest those and eat those.
Yeah, that's the problem, because my little back, we call it the potager.
Yes.
The potager garden in the back is like a little kitchen garden. It's a traditional, I've made it a traditional four-square garden. It's not divided into squares, it's divided on the diagonal, so it's, you know, triangles with a circle, like a little circle and a trellis in the middle. And I have beautiful lettuces planted. I mean, it's kind of set up really well. It's got like a row of lettuce, and everything's a curved row because it goes around the circle in the middle. So there is a curve of like green lettuce, butterhead lettuce with red edges, and then there'll be some pepper plants, and then there's another row of another kind of lettuce, like a bright green lettuce, and then there'll be a row of leeks, and then there'll be a row of kale, and you know, so it's really kind of pretty, and cabbages, and it has all these, the butterhead lettuces in particular are really pretty right now. But then I told Brian, I said, the problem with growing the like a beautiful garden is that if I pick one lettuce and there's this giant hole in this beautiful long line of of lettuces. So I said, either I'm going to have to put a little garden in the back here where I plant extras so that when I cut one, I can put another one in, or I need to start seeds for when I want to start next. So say if I'm going to harvest lettuce, I just need to harvest every other one. And then I need to have like a little alyssum or some sort of other little plant that it's ready to put in there, because it's kind of funny.
And then finally, just watering. We've been doing a lot of watering because
here.
Not only was it in the 90s here in Maine, but it was also just dry.
Yeah, we haven't had any rain since we got home. No. It rained like 2 days before we came back, I think. Or no, did we drive in the rain? We drove a little bit in the rain.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it rained a lot while we were gone, but it hadn't really rained since we got back on July 1st. So. Yeah,
and then so we got one day of rain this week.
A little bit of rain,
But yeah, so we have a 100-gallon water tank on the back of the pickup truck, the old pickup truck that came with the house here, the 1967 Jeep Gladiator, which is pretty awesome. Makes for an awesome plow truck. But yeah, I've been filling that up almost every day for you to water.
And we use it for the pigs. I mean, the pigs go through, I don't know, 10, 12 gallons of water a day. If it's really hot, I'll go up twice and fill up their wallow, because they go up and lay in it and roll around and splash around and try to stay cool that way. So yeah, they can go through a lot of water when it's hot.
So not only was it a busy week, it was a hot week. But like I said, the weather broke last night, so we're pretty excited about that. In fact, tonight, Susie put on a sweatshirt and pants. So yes,
which, I'm wearing jeans.
Very excited about jeans. Not sure if the J is silent.
That's right.
But yeah, it was in the mid-70s today, and it's supposed to get down to 59, I think, tonight, which is just super exciting. We might actually have to close some windows in the house to keep it from getting too cold.
Yes, yes.
We might have to start a fire in the morning. No, probably not.
But I might put the wool blanket over my legs as I'm doing my work in the morning.
Very nice. But yeah, with the weather breaking, as I mentioned, we had some crazy weather come through, and one of our readers / listeners, a very regular commenter on the blog, sent us a funny little email. So do you want to read Nebraska Dave's email?
Sure. He says, or Brian, his comment. Brian and Susie. And it was an email.
Oh, it was an email. Okay.
Yeah, he said, Brian and Susie, a funny thing happened while listening to the podcast last week. We had a collision of storm fronts over my city that produced microburst winds of 70 miles an hour. During the storm, I happened to be listening to your podcast. Apparently, when clicking on listening to the podcast in a different window, the podcast gets downloaded to the computer. About halfway through the episode, the lights blinked twice and everything went dark. Well, that is except for Brian and Susie. The laptop was connected to my wireless connection, which of course went down with the power outage. Since the podcast was on the laptop, you both continued on as if all was well. I had to chuckle about that. Even loss of power cannot stop the Brian and Susie Cultivate Simple podcast. I thought it was great that I got to finish the episode while the whole neighborhood was wondering what to do without power. Have a great main day, Nebraska Dave.
Yeah, that's funny. Thanks.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Thanks, Nebraska Dave, for writing in and telling us that. That's, those kind of stories make us chuckle when funny things like that happen.
Yeah, it is pretty funny.
In discussing everything, we talked this week, and I wanted to kind of revisit something that we've been talking about, one of the jokes, because we said it last week, and I thought to myself, it's our California joke that we always make, that Melanie started a long time ago, or that started with Melanie, I guess I should say, a long time ago, because we made it last week, and I thought to myself, I wonder if new listeners are coming to the show and they're thinking, geez, what's these people's deal with California, just like Melanie said. But one of the things with that idea of, you know, getting things from California is the fact that, you know, California can grow a ton of stuff and they can grow it at all different times of the year. Mm-hmm. And we in part of simplifying our lives or trying to be, and that's, you know, part of our definition of simplifying isn't minimalistic. We don't have minimalistic tendencies, but more of a mindfulness about different things.
Right.
And so this week, as we started to cultivate, or not cultivate, but sorry, got that word in my head. As we started to harvest different things out of the garden, it was funny because you're so excited about the onions, and we actually went to the farmer's market, and there was a guy selling, you know, fresh onions and
big fresh onions. Yeah, yes.
And you got so excited and had to buy a few so that we could have them.
Right, because onions have been a rare commodity in our kitchen since I used up the last bulb ones that I had grown last year, which I probably used up 2 months ago, I would say.
Right.
Somewhere thereabouts.
And typically onions are a staple in pretty much everything you make.
We usually eat them almost every meal.
But one of the things that we try to do, and one of the ways we try to be more mindful, is that we try to live and eat seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
And so this week we've really been thinking about that as we've started to harvest things out of the garden. And when we went to Ohio, one of my favorite seasonal things is strawberries. Absolutely love them. But when we went back to Ohio, because Ohio was experiencing a little bit warmer weather than normal, they'd already passed when we went back in June.
Yeah.
So we got the very, very, very tail end of them. The good thing is when we came back to Maine, they were towards the end of the season, but they were still
could still acquire some.
Yes, from various sources. There's a really nice farm stand down about a couple towns away. But that's in harvesting the peas. You know, we were talking about peas, and not only did you freeze a lot, but we also ate a lot because eating them straight away is the best way. Mm-hmm. We were watching. We've been watching a couple different shows this past week on YouTube and so on, and one of them was suggested by one of our readers, and I believe she's a listener too. But it was what's the name of it?
Tales from the Green Valley.
Yeah, Tales from the Green Valley. Another one is Monty Don.
Fork to Fork, right?
Yeah, Fork to Fork. Yeah. And Monty Don, if you've never, just do a Google search for him. He's a gardener over in England, just really funny guy, and he has some really good TV shows on the BBC. And so we were watching his Fork to Fork show, and it's really funny because he's very much a seasonal eater. Mm-hmm. And so he, what was it that he harvested from the garden? Wasn't it potatoes, new potatoes?
Yes.
So he picked some new potatoes, and then he like put them in a basket and basically ran inside in order to cook them.
I think he already had the water on, didn't he? Boiling, yeah.
And
it's like corn.
Yeah, and he threw them right in the pot, and he said, you know, that many people see potatoes as like a side dish or something, you know, that's just kind of an extra to the meal, he said. But with new potatoes, I just see them as the meal, yeah. You know, and that's all they had was new potatoes with, I think, a little bit of salt and a few herbs.
Maybe something like that. But
You have a really interesting quote from him. I don't know if you wanted to start with that one.
The asparagus one?
Yeah. Which all book? Right. Is this his Fork to Fork book?
This is the Fork to Fork book, but it's actually called, let me think. I think it's in the United States, it's called something different.
Oh, okay.
This book is called From the Garden to the Table here in the United States. So I have the Fork to Fork version. I bought it off Amazon. And then I have actually read or gotten the From the Garden to the Table from the library before, and I was like, this is really familiar. So I checked it out of the library, and it's the exact same book. It just has a different name. And I think the From the Garden to the Table is the American version, and Fork to Fork is the British version. Anyways, it's the same book. So
yeah, that's weird.
And From the Garden to the Table is cheaper if you want to buy a copy, because Fork to Fork is out of print. So little tidbit, you can get that one for like 89 cents or something like that from Amazon. But so this is what he says about asparagus. By far the most exciting harvest of May is asparagus. Asparagus is one of those foods that are corrupted by being eaten out of season. The whole point of asparagus is that it has a time and a season. Familiarity breeds lack of proper respect for its specialness. This is one of the genuine luxury foods, in the same league as caviar, foie gras, truffles, or champagne. Eating it is not only good for the taste buds, but is also good for the spirit. It makes you feel pampered and indulged. And then he says, but if it was just an indulgence that you were after, then you would need not go to the trouble of growing asparagus at home. That luxury can come just as well via a restaurant or a chill cabinet in a supermarket as from your garden. But what you cannot get from almost all bought asparagus is the incredible, unique, rich taste of truly fresh spears cut within the hour of eating. For that, you must either grow them yourself or buy them from a roadside seller. So.
And so we wanted to talk a little bit about that this week, about learning to live seasonally. And obviously a big part of that is eating seasonally, but it kind of encompasses everything.
I think when you start to eat seasonally, it really helps you kind of live more seasonally, because I think your food and your diet really do kind of, everything kind of goes into them and stems from them. So it's a lot easier to be in tune with the seasons if your diet is also in tune with the seasons. Because otherwise, if you're eating sweet corn in December, it's really hard to kind of get into the, feel of December. It's not like most people are eating lobster and corn on the cob for Christmas dinner. It's just one of those things that's
Well, and that's kind of where my meal. That's where my little talk in the beginning of this about, you know, the strawberries from California, yeah, because you can get strawberries almost year round. Yeah. Now, who knows where they're from? Sometimes from South America, all over the world, and it was really interesting because we went to the co-op this past week and I was looking at the fruit, mm-hmm, because red raspberries are in season right now here, mm-hmm, in Maine, and yet the ones that they had at the co-op this week were from Driscoll's, which is California.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's really funny. Yeah.
I'm gonna go pick at a local place tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I think so.
But being able to only have something like that quote says, being able to only have certain things at certain times really makes you appreciate, mm-hmm, that thing in its time.
That's like strawberries. You know, you really appreciate strawberries when they're in season, and then you enjoy them to no end. And then when they're gone, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And you don't eat strawberries again until they come back in season the next year. And it makes you really appreciate them and really appreciate them in their season, in their time. You know, it comes to mean more than just the strawberry, because it's kind of a signal of the beginning of summer, and it just helps kind of get you in tune with the natural cycles of kind of the things that are going on in the garden, in the, you know, the world right around you,
right,
outside your window. And I have a really good quote that kind of talks about this in the book called, in all these books, I'm going to put it in our books of the week. This one's called Full Moon Feast. And this is a really interesting book from author Jessica Prentice. And she talks, this book is all about kind of getting back in tune with food and what food really means. She talks a lot about how in our society, food has kind of lost its, a lot of its connotations outside of health. It's all, mm-hmm, about fat-free, low-fat. This is good for you. This has antioxidants. This isn't. This is what you need to eat. You need to eat whole grains. You need to eat white rice. You know, I mean, it's all about, there are all these rules, and food has kind of lost its cultural significance, its community significance, its spiritual significance. Just a lot of the things that it's always been highly regarded as and kind of been in connection with throughout history. And this book is really, it's a really, really interesting book if you're kind of into reading a little bit more about that. And here's a quote from page 11 of this book. For many of us, our interest in seasonality is somewhat selective. We want the warmth without the cold. We want the long days without the long nights. We want the abundance without scarcity. We want birth and growth without death and decay. But without the death and decay, there is no rebirth. Abundance is subjective, is a subjective experience, not an objective reality. It is something that we feel, not something that we have. And I really kind of... Oh, and let me read this. This is the following paragraph. Without the sense of scarcity, there is no sense of abundance, because there is no perspective. At the height of summer, when there are beautiful, fresh, juicy tomatoes, sweet corn, crisp green beans, and peaches that are bursting with flavor, we may flock to the farmer's market and celebrate the joys of the harvest. But our enthusiasm doesn't last through the hunger moon. Beets, dry beans, ham, and sauerkraut don't have the same sex appeal as the sweet, juicy offerings of summer. Around the country, most farmers' markets close during the winter due to lack of produce or customers when the weather is cold. During the hunger moon, we return to the supermarkets to buy produce imported from tropical countries where the sun still shines, and our interest in seasonality is seasonal.
That's a good line.
And I really kind of love that, because it's very true. And I love that without scarcity, there is no abundance. And that's really true. That's kind of the whole, without sorrow, there is no joy. Mm. And that's true. And that's the way it is for strawberries and for just about anything. You really enjoy it because there is a lack of it for the rest of the year. And that's kind of the way I feel about onions. I will never be able to grow enough bulb onions for us to eat onions at every meal. We eat a lot of onions when we have onions, but then I'm also trying to grow other alliums and trying to learn other things to grow to kind of fill that void of the onion. They're a little more seasonally, so things like leeks, which are very seasonal during the spring and the winter, and then a little bit in the fall, depending on how you grow them, and scallions and bunching onions and all those other kinds of allium plants that can kind of take the place of a bulb onion, but are
still not the same.
Not the same, but more in tune with the seasons, and they work a little bit different in recipes, and, you know, they taste a little different, but that's the whole point, I think.
Well, and in that show, The Tales from the Green Valley, that I wish I'd have looked up who told us about that.
It was Julia from Colorado.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In the premise of that show is that it's based in a Welsh farm, I want to say.
I think so.
In the 1600s. Mm-hmm. And these historians that are on there have been on different shows that we've watched. And they, you know, dress in period clothes. They only use tools that are period appropriate. It's really interesting to watch. But that was one thing I noticed as we were watching that show is that, you know, they talk a lot about the seasonality of life, that, you know, in the fall and in Christmas, especially they talk about Christmas and the Christmas feasts and the, you know, the celebration, but the people were also celebrating and just eating and gorging themselves and enjoying it because they knew that winter was coming and that, you know, not hard times, but lean times were coming where, you know, the fresh vegetables and even the larder was starting to get a little bit thin, and meat and those types of things, you know, they were either eating it up or they couldn't keep it for much longer. And so they would just celebrate and they would enjoy it while they could, because then, you know, when deep winter comes and there's really not a lot of fresh stuff to eat, except for some of the things that you mentioned, you know, leeks and different things like that. They really experienced that, you know, in a real way, because they had to. I mean, there was no way to, they didn't do canning or those types of things. And so there was no way to preserve those things throughout the winter. They talked about fruit and how they would, you know, put fruit, apples and pears and different things up in their ceilings in between the roof and the top of their ceiling. And it was cool enough up there that it would keep the apples crisp and different things, but that even those would only stay for so long. But I think that made them appreciate. It's kind of like a kid, you know, speaking about them and Christmas and having this Christmas feast. It's kind of like kids. If you give kids gifts all year long, they get excited about it for about 5 minutes, but they don't really appreciate the gifts where, you know, we've been to other countries where, and you grew up in South America. And I can recall going down there, 2 times ago with school supplies and going to, you know, a school where a lot of the kids come from very poor neighborhoods, and you would give them crayons, you know, their own set of crayons or their own set of pencils or something, you know, a little special in the gift. And it was just so special to them because they never get that, or they rarely get that. And it was just such a treat. And when something's a treat, I think you really appreciate it. Just like, you know, a gift. When a kid gets a birthday gift or a Christmas gift, and that's the only time they get really nice special gifts, they really appreciate that. And it is an exciting time. And just like strawberries. I mean, I love strawberries. If I could eat strawberries, we always, you know, play these goofy games of, if you could eat one thing and it was the only thing you could eat, what would you eat? And mine is usually strawberries. I just love, love, love strawberries. But I don't think I would love strawberries as much if I could get them year-round all the time, you know, and that was the only thing I could eat. But because of that seasonality, because of only being able to have them and really only being able to have them for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, that makes them extremely special. And that's when they're the best, too, because not saying anything about California strawberries, but they're kind of like styrofoam, but they have to be.
Right.
Because in order to be transported, you know, picked and then transported across the country mm-hmm. and still be edible. And I mean, if you did that with our strawberries, they'd be kind of shriveled up and a little bit.
Oh, they'd be a rotten, moldy mess, probably. Right.
But you know, that's...
Well, it's like the broccoli. Right. You know, that's the thing, is the things you buy in the grocery store aren't bred for taste or any of that.
Yeah.
They're bred for...
Perfectness
coming
of
ripe at the same time, yeah. generally for looks, and then for ruggedness for shipping.
So they can be shipped for 5 or 6 days or, you know, and then sit on a store shelf for another 5 or 6 days.
Growing it yourself or for buying it from local farmers is that hopefully, I mean, you can grow whatever you end up wanting and whatever you like. And then a lot of times small farmers, local farmers are growing interesting varieties as well, because they're not growing, you know, they're not going to have the 3 different kinds of apples you get at the grocery store. They might be right. growing some of those, but they're going to be growing a lot of other kind of interesting apples as well. And I think that that's one of the really the greatest thing about kind of the greatest thing about heading down this road is that you it really kind of makes you have to be more creative in a way, because you can't get the same thing all the time all year long. I mean, you can, but you're not buying the same thing all the time all year long, so you don't get stuck in a rut. You have to learn how to cook new things. You have to be more creative sometimes when you don't have the ingredients that you think you need for a certain recipe. But in that, there's a lot of reward that comes from it as well, because you get to try a lot of different things. I mean, I don't know if I ever would have tried celery root had it not been one of the only things available at the farmer's market in January. You know, right. I bought a ton of it and we ate a ton of it and we love it, as a result. And I think I remember, back in June, when Dalen and his friend Wade were here, and they went into the co-op to get something, and they came back with some sweet potatoes and some other like vegetables that they had bought. And he said to me, don't you like sweet potatoes? And I said, oh yeah, I love sweet potatoes. And he said, oh, but you've never bought them when I've been here. And I said, that's because I grow them. I said, and I eat what I grow. And generally my sweet potatoes are gone by April or May, you know, because I don't grow a ton of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I grow some, we eat them all fall, winter, and then into the spring. And I try to eat them all by the time that the lettuces and those kinds of things are coming in the garden, because I don't want to be eating sweet potatoes anymore. I really, at that point, want to be eating dandelion greens and salads and that kind of thing. That's just kind of what my body wants at that point. And then he kind of looked at me and he was like, oh. I said, yeah, I mean, I really believe that it's healthiest, and it's kind of the way, if you're religious, God or nature or whatever intended for us to be eating what's in seasonal around us, and it's going to provide the most nourishing food that it can at that point for us, and it's kind of what we need. There's a reason that if you live in a cold climate in the winter, you have access to root vegetables, which are easy to dig and just throw in the cellar and store. And they provide a lot of warming energy. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason that it's that way, because that's what you need at that point. You need those kinds of, you need those dense, they're a little bit richer foods for that season to stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just one of those, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's, once you start doing it, it just makes sense and it just seems right. And your body's really happy to be eating roasted root vegetables in a roast or something in the winter, as opposed to a salad and, I don't know, a hot dog.
Well, and like I said, I believe that it makes you appreciate those things a lot more too, because there's something to be said for I don't want this to sound wrong, but there's something to be said for denying yourself of things.
Mm-hmm.
So to take that a different direction, away from food or away from this type of thing, there's something to be said for denying yourself buying crap when you don't need crap. And it's better to be out of debt than to have a lot of junk that
mm-hmm.
you don't, you know, need. There's also, in the same way, it's good to deny yourself something to make you appreciate what you do have even more. Does that make sense, the way I'm saying that?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I think that's another kind of, you know, religious thing as well. Because when you do that, when you make a decision that, you know, yeah, I would really love a sweet potato right now, or whatever it is, I'd really love some strawberries, even though the season mm-hmm. has passed. It's always funny when we do that, though, because that's almost like when we go out to restaurants. Whenever you and I go out to restaurants, we're always disappointed, right?
Yeah.
Because restaurant food, most of the time, 90% of the time, just isn't great. I mean, it's all right. It's all right. You know, you don't have to prepare it yourself, so that's a bonus. But it doesn't taste great. It's not made with really good ingredients. It's not, you know, you can do better, which is our main problem, is that you're a really good cook. But we're always disappointed. And that's the same thing. If I bought strawberries right now from California, I would be completely disappointed in mm-hmm. them. I would be like, I shouldn't say from California.
Or wherever.
Because they just would not be the little delicious beauties that we get out of our right. own patch.
And that's the thing, is you don't need to buy strawberries because the raspberries are in season right. right now. So we can have raspberries. And then when the raspberries are done, the wild blueberries are going to be in season. So then we mm-hmm. can eat wild blueberries. And then after that, you get maybe some autumn raspberries that are coming in, or the pears, or the early apples. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of thing starts, the peaches start to come ripe. So that's what I love about seasonal living, eating, is that it forces you to not get stuck in a rut mm-hmm. because you can't. You just have to be willing to move on to the next thing yeah. that's coming. You know, it's like you just fully experience the moment mm-hmm. kind of. That's really what it's all about.
And we also, I want to say too, that I don't want this to be like, oh, if you eat something in, you know, December, that's terrible. Cause that's not what we're saying.
No. And it's not about buying things from far away, because we still get citrus, but we get yeah. citrus when it's in season. So there's a farm in Texas that I get citrus from, and I have before gotten their like their fruit of the month club. So it starts whenever they start harvesting. It can be November, it can be mid-December, it depends on the weather. And then every month they just send you a box of whatever is ripe through, I think, March. And then in March everything's over and you don't get any more citrus until yeah. November. So, and even with things that we're ordering from far away, we're still trying to enjoy things seasonally as well. I get Meyer lemons from the Lemon Ladies Orchard out in California mm-hmm. Every year, and I order a big box from her, and we eat lemons like crazy and make lemon curd and enjoy it mixed with our yogurt. And I make one jar of preserved lemons, and we kind of use those throughout the season. And it's not that you shouldn't ever... I mean, it's not like a monk thing where you're
yeah
completely denying yourself and, you know, throwing ashes on your face and that kind of thing. You're just trying to be more aware of the seasons around you in particular, and supporting the farms around your area. And it comes down to building a community around that too, because food and what you eat isn't just about going to the grocery store and buying it. It really is also about community and heritage and history and culture. And I mean, there's so much more that goes along with food than just food and eating.
Mm.
And when you start to get in tune with the culture around it in your area, it makes it easier and it's a lot more fun too. You know, mm-hmm. I went to the farmer's market on Friday. I didn't really need anything because our gardens are producing like crazy. But so I went because I get chicken necks and backs for our dogs and cats from the local poultry guy, and I pick them up at the farmer's market. So I picked up 40 pounds of chicken necks and wings. And then I said, well, I'll walk around and see if anybody's got anything. And then I found onions, which I was excited about because my onions, I could harvest my onions. But if I can buy people who harvest their onions early at the farmer's market, and I like to buy stuff from other people and support them, so I bought some onions from some guy. And I've got onions in the garden I could harvest early, but I didn't want to. And then there was also the lady selling honey, who I haven't seen since last fall. And I was just noticing earlier this week that I was getting low on honey and I needed some honey. And so she was there and I talked to her a little bit. And it's just great to get in tune with that because she's harvesting honey right now. So she has honey. So she's got a bunch of honey that she's selling. And so it's kind of exciting because I really was almost out of honey. And I use mostly maple syrup because we make it ourselves. But it keeps you in tune with that. Because I kind of know about honeybees because we've had a hive, but if you've never had a hive and don't know anything about them, seeing the cycle at the farmer's market and when she's there and talking to her, kind of you can learn a little bit about the things that you don't know about and the seasons of when honey is harvested and that kind of thing. So you know, well, if I'm getting low, I need to wait until July, or you know, in your area it might be June, in order to buy more honey locally, and maybe I can just do without until then, instead of buying some in a little bear at the grocery store or something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that you're saying that about, you know, different things coming in different times when they're supposed to. And it's interesting that maple syrup comes in February.
Mm-hmm.
Usually here in Maine, the honey harvest happens in the beginning of July, and then if you do a late honey harvest, it'll be, you know, right before like end of September ish somewhere mm-hmm. around there, which if you think about it, you know, that's like perfect placement for mm-hmm. maple syrup as a sweetener, honey as a sweetener, honey as a sweetener, maple mm-hmm. syrup, and you know, the cycle continues. So yeah, I mean, just things like that you're aware of that mm-hmm. that's just part of another layer. It's kind of like, you know, we always talk about flavoring your food, and mm-hmm. you know, you have herbs and you have spices and you have, of course, the food itself, which needs to be good quality too. That's like another layer to mm-hmm. tasting a meal is, wow, onions. Can you taste the onions there? Yeah. Aren't they awesome? So it adds to everything. It adds to the mm-hmm. experience, and adds to the mindfulness of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, our focus in our lives is trying to be more mindful about the different things that we do, you know, whatever they may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as a result, I don't do a ton of canning, freezing, preserving, that kind of thing. I grew up in a family that did. We would can green beans and all that kind of stuff all summer, and then we would eat on them in the winter. And while I don't mind canned green beans, I would much rather eat sweet potatoes and chicories and endives and cabbage and Brussels sprouts and those kinds of things now instead of canned green beans. So that's one of the things.
And canned green beans are not as good as fresh green beans. I mean, that's just...
No, yeah. You know. And they take a lot of time. They take a lot of energy, which is one of the main reasons I don't can, is because it's not a priority for me. And I would rather grow something else in the garden and pick it fresh, because I don't want to spend the time, the money, and the energy on canning things, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of time. And your food's definitely going to be healthier if you're picking it fresh from the garden and eating it as is, or if it's a root crop that is kind of made to store and gets better with age sometimes. So I do freeze a few things. I freeze some peas because we eat a lot of soups and stews in the winter. And I do like peas in some of those, you know, like a beef stew is really good with some peas in it. So I freeze, I think I froze, what, 14 2-cup containers of peas. And I'll freeze some raspberries probably. And if I can get enough, I'll freeze some blueberries. But as far as freezing lots about and like preserving anything, I might freeze a couple of pints of sweet corn. But I've dehydrated that with great success. It's really good dehydrated and takes up a lot less space. But yeah, so that's about it. Because someone was asking about what I can and preserve and freeze and all that kind of stuff. And I really don't. I try instead to focus on eating seasonally and eating all those crazy things like leeks and celery root and yeah, those.
And maybe that's a symptom of people not thinking that they can eat seasonally is because if you go to the store, you know, typically in the store, there's the normal things, you know, tomatoes and potatoes and they typically have celery and some sort of green pepper and a red pepper maybe. And you see those things year round. Well, we know you can't grow those things year round. Yeah. So we just have this mental block of, oh, well, those things aren't available fresh to me. I can't go to the farmer's market. Like it said, in, you know, the farmer's market closes down in the winter. I can't get those things local. So therefore, I can't eat seasonally. But yeah, different things that we've been trying out, like, you know, celery root that you mentioned. Didn't we hear that on the River Cottage?
Yeah, he kept talking about it.
About celeriac, and we're like, what? What? I mean, we kind of know what it is.
And I think I bought some before, and we ate it, you know, and it actually was difficult to find back in Ohio at our farmer's market. That's the thing is some of these things can be difficult to find at your local farmer's market because there's not a big... People aren't demanding it. And so a lot of growers are setting up greenhouses and trying to grow lettuce and other things in the winter and extend the season and get earlier tomatoes and later tomatoes and early zucchini because that's kind of what people want. And that's what there is a demand for.
Right.
So, I mean, even the non-seasonal living affects the local food movement as well. And it makes it more difficult for farmers because it's a lot more difficult for them to try to set up greenhouses and do all this extra work to get early tomatoes when they could just be planting celery root and growing that if people would buy it and eat it. And you're just missing out on so many interesting things when...
I mean, if you look around our table right now, we have our, you know, our microphones and our laptops sitting here and then there's Susie's box of seeds and probably, oh, I'm just going to venture a guess and say 300 packets of seeds, you know, of all different fruits, vegetables, all kinds of stuff, herbs, just everything, flowers. But think of all those varieties. I mean, you probably have, I don't know, 4 or 5 different varieties of carrots.
Oh, I have like 20 different varieties of carrots.
Well, there you go. But, you know...
And I planted 6 today in the garden.
So we don't... You know, you just don't think about the variety and think of the experience that you can have trying to eat seasonally. Don't just think of it as a drudgery that you can't have or that I can't have strawberries in, you know, November, but that all of these...
But you can have cranberries and apples and apple cranberry pandowdy or things like that.
Yeah, yeah. So there are things, and that's, again, it goes back to that appreciating things and coming up with interesting ways to prepare things, too, using what is available in season. And sometimes discovering things that you didn't necessarily think you would like or that you didn't even know existed. And then finding out that, wow, like this is really great.
Parsnips and salisfy and, you know, like black winter radishes. And there's just, when you start reading about winter gardening in particular and growing like the cold weather, the cold hardy things in the garden, it opens up a whole new world of really interesting things. certain kinds of cabbage. You know, there are ones that you grow and they form the big heads and then you make sauerkraut out of them that you eat on all winter. But then there are certain varieties that you leave out in the garden and they turn these beautiful shades of purple and blue and they have beautiful crinkly leaves and you can harvest them in the spring. And it's just mind-blowing to read about the sheer number of vegetables and fruits and roots and all of these things that if you never open yourself up to eating seasonally, you would never experience. And you're missing out on so many interesting things because parsnips are really good when they're roasted. Root vegetables, if you make a root vegetable roast in January with some carrots, maybe a rutabaga, some celery root, some potatoes, some parsnips, some sweet potato maybe. That's fantastic eating right there. Mm-hmm. Put maybe some thyme if you have some on there. Maybe just a little bit of maple syrup and some salt and pepper. I would take that over canned green beans or frozen broccoli any day.
That's right.
Absolutely any day. It really does just open up a whole new world. And it's so much more fitting, you know, when it's cold and snowy outside, you want that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And living seasonally is completely different for people who live in Texas. You know, I grew up in Colombia where, it wasn't so much seasonal living. There were staples that were available pretty much year round because of the climate. But yeah, like mangoes were in season certain times and you could only buy them in the grocery store at certain times when they were ripe. And that kind of thing.
So you have a couple other, quotes from different books. And one of the books that you love, that you absolutely
love. And
this
is the book that got me started on the road of eating seasonally, and gardening and just kind of living more seasonally, living my entire life a little more in tune with the seasons, not necessarily just eating, spending my winters doing a little bit more reading and having a little bit more downtime and spending my summers being a lot more active and outside and that kind of thing. This book was really an eye opener for me. It's called Living Seasonally and it's out of print. It can be ridiculously pricey if you, sometimes you can find it for a good deal. Sometimes you can sign up and put it on your wish list on paperback swap.
Or check your library.
And read it. Check it out of the library and read it. I kept checking my copy out of the library over and over and over again. So I finally decided it was worth spending. I think I paid $40 or $50 for my copy. I figured it was worth it because I read this book at least once a year, sometimes more than once a year. I really, really like it.
I actually asked the ladies at the library, if we didn't return this, exactly how does that whole thing work? Like, how much would we be fined? But we wanted to leave it there for other people to enjoy.
Yeah. So I decided to take the, you know, spend the money on it and buy it. But I have a couple of quotes from this book, which I really appreciate. And it's written by Joe Eck and Wayne Winterrad. And they have a beautiful garden in Vermont, which I would love to go visit one of these days, hopefully soon. Even in the dead of winter, the products of our labor were good. From the freezer, we could choose broccoli or cauliflower, peas, beans, or corn, anytime we pleased. In spring, we often had them all together in orgies of vegetable soups meant to clear the freezer for the next round. Though certainly we were well fed and spiritually content at living from our own labors, the broccoli, peas, beans, cauliflower, and corn came to have a certain sameness about them, a predictable, ready-on-demand sort of quality that robbed us of much of the joy of them. The seasons were all flattened out, and one sitting to the table came to seem just like another. And that is just a fabulous way of explaining what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And everything kind of becomes the same and it becomes homogenous and we fail to realize that the weather is different outside and that our plate should be different inside as we sit around our table.
And that's, I mean, when you think about that, that's what we, everything in our lives, it's just like the other quote where it was talking about the, you know, the heat without the cold and the all those different things. You know, it's so funny that, and after coming out of this past week, it's very poignant to talk about this, that when it's hot, we want our houses to be cold, mm-hmm. right? So we turn on the air conditioner. And yes, there is, you know, a point where it's just way too hot. But then, you know, when it's cold outside, we want it to be warm. So we heat our homes. And we always used to joke because our friends, we'd always make fun of them. Because our friends in the summer, they would turn their air conditioner down to like, you know, 60 degrees. I mean, you'd go to their house and you would literally need to wear a jacket inside. It was freezing in the summer. But then you'd go over there in the winter when it could very easily be 60 degrees in their house, but they'd have it at 80 degrees.
And you'd be sweating.
And you'd be sweating. And you're just like, what? There's a disconnect here somewhere. But yeah, it's like we want everything. We always want our lives to be the same. But where's the like fun in that? You know, where's the variety? Variety's the spice of life, as they say. So yeah, it's just, it's an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm. So I have a few more quotes. I probably don't need to read all of these, but
they're really good, though.
They're really good. So, and this will probably make you want to go out and check this book out of the library because they just have a really wonderful way of writing. Yeah. I probably own all their books and I really like all of them. This one is by far my favorite. And if our house was on fire, I would definitely stop and grab this book. That's how much I like this book.
After Dexter, of course.
Yes. So yeah. Here's another quote. There is as well something deeply comforting about a winter larder, connecting us with ancestors who either provided for their own needs or went without. The question, what shall we have for dinner, thus becomes not a matter of pleasant choices among options within close proximity, but also a realization of some vital link, historically, spiritually, and with our own past. Finally, there is still something living about vegetables one gathers out of storage. Chicories have actually grown, prodding fat wilt leaves deep beneath a thick layer of peat, signaling their readiness for the table by snouts poking barely into the air. Cabbages and Brussels sprouts are stored with their roots and outer leaves, from which they still draw sustenance throughout the winter. Carrots, beets, and winter radishes pulled from the damp sand will display frail white whiskers of root, and may have produced a tuft of new leaves, not an unacceptable addition to a winter salad. Mm. All of this, with the smell of life still on it, reminds us, if with a difference, of the pleasure of the summer garden, and of harvesting from a medium closer to life than a plastic bag. And I really love that quote because it's a whole different way. Pulling potatoes that you grew from your root cellar, or sweet potatoes, or onions and carrots and beets and those kinds of things, if you've grown enough to be able to store in your root cellar or a little corner of your garage or something, pulling those out of your root cellar as opposed to pulling out a glass jar filled with something that you canned is a completely different experience because you can still smell the earth. There's still life in those vegetables. They're still growing leaves. You know, they're still essentially a live plant. Mm-hmm. When you decide they'll still your sweet potatoes or your potatoes, if you leave them long enough, they're going to sprout and try to reproduce their kind. And you can make your own sweet potato slips the next spring. Some of the potatoes in my garden come from some that my mom and I grew last year that just kind of started to sprout when it was that time of the year. So there's something inherently satisfying about eating food that still has life in it. Mm. I think in the middle of winter, even though it's not seen as kind of exotic or interesting or I don't know. There's just something about eating food like that that makes it, for some reason, more satisfying, and it just seems healthier, and your body really, really appreciates it.
So, what do you think? Do you think we've convinced anyone to...
I don't know. I hope so. And I should say, this is my advice. So if you want to live seasonally or learn to live even a little bit more seasonally, One of the blogs I write for, it's like a co-op blog, so there's a bunch of us that write on it. We last year took over the Dark Days Challenge, which Urban Henry, who then became, I forget what the new name of her blog is, used to do, became something else because she actually moved out into the country, so she was no longer Urban. But she used to do what was called the Dark Days Challenge. And what it was is from, I think it was Thanksgiving through end of April, one meal a week should consist of only products that you've either grown yourself or that you can find locally that aren't like frozen, canned, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are some parameters. So you can use cabbages from your garden or potatoes that you've grown and stored yourself. You can't necessarily use frozen corn because that doesn't really count right. for this. But just try to eat one meal that's completely seasonal mm-hmm. and local if possible. I think the rules were within 100 miles of your home. So, and you could use staples, like you could use dried staples. So if you grew peas, like the dried kind, mm-hmm. then you could have pea soup with a ham hock if you could get one from a local farm, and then maybe some kale or something like that. Or wheat. If you could find local wheat, then you could make bread with that local wheat, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But that was always a really great challenge and a really great way to do it. Just try to do it one day a week and really try to be mindful in that meal of the different flavors that you're experiencing, how it's different than the other meals that you're eating that week, what you like, what you don't. Try to fix things different ways. Things like mashed potatoes. I love mashed potatoes. And if you can put a celery root in there, the mashed potatoes are way better than regular mashed potatoes. I mean, it's amazing the delicious flavor that just a little thing like that is going to enhance mm-hmm. other things in the meal. So and that's what I would recommend doing if you want to. And it's super easy in the summer. Going to the farmer's market every week is just a great way to get in tune with the seasons too. Go there, buy what you see that you like, buy things that perhaps you don't think you like and try cooking them a different way. Try enjoying them differently. If you don't like zucchini, try making zucchini pickles or try, eating them in a different way, sauteing them, using them in lasagna, making noodles out of them, that kind of thing. So going to the farmer's market is also a great way to see what's ripe, see what's in season, and enjoy things at their best. Because maybe you've never, and I think we've said this before, maybe you don't like zucchini, but maybe you've never had a fresh local zucchini. And zucchini is probably bad example. Maybe it's something else. But yeah, you might find that you like something if it's plucked fresh from the earth.
Yep. Just like Monty Don grabbing his new potatoes and
that's right.
running inside to eat them.
And you know? Yeah, potatoes are like that. Homegrown potatoes or local potatoes. I mean, when you get potatoes at the farmer's market or when you dig them up in your own garden and you cut into them, it's like cutting into an apple. You get that like crisp ridiculousness, which you never get if you buy potatoes at the grocery store that are who knows how old. I mean, you just never know with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so it's a whole different vegetable.
And as we've said multiple times during this talk, the main reason to do this is just to be more mindful, is just to think about the seasons and think about to appreciate what it takes sometimes to grow these things and, mm-hmm. and the labor that it takes and the, you know, just to be more mindful about it, because that does make you appreciate the food and the flavors and everything about it. Mm-hmm. And it just enriches and makes the meals fuller in some way, more alive. And it's a great way to enhance your pleasure in mm-hmm. in the meals and in food. So hopefully that all makes sense, and hopefully we don't I always have this fear that we come off as, you know, oh, you shouldn't eat. But that's not what we're saying. We're not saying that it's like that it's bad to do these things. We're saying it's good to appreciate your food, to enjoy your food, to be more mindful about all these things. So,
and maybe having a only local meal one day a week will help you appreciate that you can have strawberries in the middle of winter if you do want to have strawberries in the middle of winter. Mm. It's all about whether you're going to eat locally or not. It's all about learning to be a little more appreciative of the things that you do have, because it makes you see things for the value that they have and not be as wasteful and not take as much advantage of things that you have and not become callous to, things become habitual and then we stop noticing them. And that's really sad, because there's great pleasure and beauty in eating. You know, we have a lot of wonderful opportunities to eat really great food, particularly here in this country, because we are very blessed with abundance of food. And yet many people choose to eat not great food, you know, which is really sad. And a lot of people don't eat mindfully. They don't even think about what they're eating a lot of times. And maybe this will help you just become a little bit more mindful about the food, not necessarily if you're even eating locally, just, or seasonally, just sit down and really appreciate the food that you are consuming, whether it be seasonal, local, or from the grocery store.
Because it is part of you, you know, it literally becomes part of you. The nutrients and the minerals and all the different things within your food, you know, it's what not only nourishes us, but it's what, you know, sustains us. It becomes part of us. And so you should appreciate it. I mean, you should be mindful of it. So
what's your favorite? What do you think your favorite season is as far as food goes?
My favorite?
Do you have one? Do you like summer foods?
I like strawberries. I don't know. Probably my favorite is the fall, right around, because like apples and pumpkin and those types of things. Like I like the cinnamon, nutmeg, the spices that come along with that, and ciders and those different types of things that just, I don't know, that really is very comfortable to me. What about you?
I love winter, oddly enough.
Really?
I really love root vegetables. There's something I love about roasted root vegetables and, you know, the crispy kind of caramelized outside and the soft inside, and they're just very warming. And I love winter because of the rest aspect of it. I think when you're a gardener, you become really in tune to the seasons a little bit more than ordinary folks as far as work and rest.
Right.
And so I really love winter for that. And I feel like the food in winter just really goes along with that, like that comforting and relaxing. And, you know, a lot of the foods you can make a lot of stews and put them on, cut them up in the morning and kind of let them go throughout the day. And it's not a lot of fussy eating. Winter food is just so simple. And yet there's something so hearty and
warm
and nourishing about it. I really like that for some reason. Probably because I grew up in the tropics and we never really had that.
Yeah.
We always had lots of tropical stuff. But I always loved soups and freshly baked bread and just that kind of thing. I like spring salads a lot, too.
I was just
going to
say, although in the salads, yeah.
I do love the salad in the spring. Oddly enough, I'm probably my least favorite would be summer. Isn't that weird?
Really?
If I could leave any season out, it would probably be summer.
Why do you think tomatoes,
I don't know. I think because I grew up with a traditional, we grow a big garden, we grow beans, corn, peas, that kind of thing. We freeze beans, corn, that kind of thing. Yeah. So we eat beans, corn all the time. So I feel like in my childhood, I had enough green beans to do me for the rest of my life. I hardly even grow green beans. I love green beans and I like them cooked fresh. But
yeah, you didn't grow any this year, did you?
I have some planted in the 5x5 garden.
Which, yeah.
We'll otherwise, I wouldn't have planted any.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just one of those things. And like sweet corn, I don't mind eating sweet corn once or twice, but that's good enough for me. It's probably because I was summer vegetabled out as a kid, eating it all the time. I would much rather eat a really bitter radicchio in the middle of winter. Or it's just, yeah, I really appreciate those kinds of things. Yeah, I could leave summer out for sure.
So that's the question for this week, is what's your favorite season of eating? And maybe that, just that question will get you to think, well, gee, do I eat anything seasonally? But come back over to the show notes, come back over to the podcast episode and share what your favorite season is and why. Why do you like to eat in certain seasons, or what is it that you like about those seasons? But hopefully, like we said, hopefully that this just gets you to think a little bit more about that and think a little bit more about the seasons. I can't believe it, but we're halfway through summer.
Yeah.
You know, and
we've been eating a few ripe tomatoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And just starting to get into sort of the bountiful harvest time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are starting to come ripe, and a lot of things, you know, from here until,
I'm super excited for potatoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why you planted over 200 pounds of seed potatoes. That's one of those things
we don't eat really unless it's homegrown and stored. I don't really buy potatoes at the store. And it's one of those things that we eat every day when we have them in the pantry, and they're so good, and we eat them mostly fried for breakfast, or mashed potatoes with some onion gravy or something for supper. But yeah, we love fresh potatoes,
so we're excited about
our
fresh potatoes. All right, well, that's going to be it for this week. Next week, we'll be back. We're actually going to talk, oddly enough, we're going to talk about preserving a little bit, what we preserve, which goes hand in hand with this episode, next week, and talk about different methods of preserving and what we preserve, which we shared a little bit tonight. But
might be a scarce episode.
Yeah, which is all right.
But we can I need to think about some of the things that I definitely take the time to preserve and can. A few interesting things that are probably very out of the ordinary as far as the normal list of what most people can and preserve. So
until next week, we just we hope that you'll think about living a little bit more seasonally and definitely more mindfully as you cultivate simple.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now. Somehow it all depends. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the tree.
see my hometown. I'd rather hold my wife. I'd rather never question things. That's the story of my life. I'd rather not be crying. I'd rather just be whole. I'd rather brave the cleansing fire. I'd rather feed my soul. If I could fly away from me, open to suggestions. I'm crying out to you. I'm ready to be finished here. I'm ready for this season to be if I could fly away from me to ride this wind above the trees, and go to fly away. Come and face the longing. Whoa.